All right, good morning. I also have our research coordinator from our institute here. I like to embarrass her by introducing her, Laura, who put together these PowerPoint slides and does all of our stats. So I'm here to talk about the effectiveness of teen pregnancy and evidence-based curricula with disconnected youth. And my disclosures, I have no financial relationships or, I'm a social worker, so this doesn't totally make sense to me because I never make money off of anything. So the objectives here today are to discuss the sexual health needs among disconnected youth, explain the impact of the two evidence-based curricula that we're currently using in a project, and discuss some of the challenges we've had in implementing those curricula. So what we know, our pregnancy and STD rates are very high among what we call disconnected youth, and it's kind of a newer term that's being used, encompassing youth who are not connected really with traditional academic settings or other nonprofits. So we're talking about a lot of foster youth, youth in juvenile detention, youth who might be in and out of substance use, use treatment, and mental health facilities. In Texas, we're very special, and sexual health education is not required in our schools. It is optional for school districts. And so the information that they get in school anyways is very fragmented. Oftentimes, it's taught from textbooks that have information that is questionably factual. So youth in Texas are not necessarily getting good education anyways, and then youth who are involved in different systems are kind of missing what little information they could actually get in a classroom setting. So a lot of the evidence-based curricula, though, have really been normed in these education settings, which our youth are not involved with. So we really wanted to look at how do we reach youth in these other settings? How do we reach the foster youth? We know they have higher pregnancy rates. How do we reach the youth in juvenile detention centers? We know that they have really high rates of pregnancy and STDs as well. So that's what we really wanted to find out. And I know when I was a social worker working with foster youth, I was desperate to find anything that I could use with the girls that I was working with. And there was just nothing out there. And so now we're kind of at a point in the literature where everybody's talking about trauma-informed sex ed and how we need to go farther, but we haven't quite gotten to how we do that. And so looking at these evidence-based curricula, I think, is a start. So our project is called the Connections Project, and we're at different sites throughout Texas. So we are at juvenile detention centers in Dallas, in Houston. We're starting in Austin as well. We're at a homeless shelter in San Antonio, at foster care. I think they're all foster care shelters in Fort Worth, Austin, and Houston, and also one residential treatment center for females who have experienced substance use. That particular facility, once we started, I found out they actually have a pretty large number of trafficking victims who have come through there as well. So that's kind of where we're at. We're all over the state, and we've been able to get into these different sites. The two curricula that the sites actually chose themselves, so our team kind of went in and said, what evidence-based curricula would you like to use? Here's some different options. They were really looking for curricula that were short because these kids are so transient. They were like, no, we need you to get in and get out in a week. Sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. But they're using Making Proud Choices and Be Proud, Be Responsible. These are both curricula that were developed by the same developer. Be Proud, Be Responsible is shorter, so it's six different modules, and Making Proud Choices is eight modules, and those modules are intended to be about an hour each. So some of our sites, like the Juvenile Detention Center in Harris County, has said, we need you to come on a Saturday, and we need you to do all the modules back to back, because we're going to lose kids. Other sites, they've been able to, like at the treatment center in Dallas, they can come once a week, because the girls are generally there a little bit longer. Both of these curricula are really, in my opinion, the longer I've worked with them, designed for kids who are already sexually active. They wouldn't necessarily be appropriate for younger youth. So in our logic model for the program, really I just want to focus on the outcomes. What we're trying to do is increase knowledge of safer sex, improve attitudes about safer sex, increase condom self-efficacy, and increase behavioral intent about having safer sex, and decrease the intended number of partners. So with our outcome evaluation, we are doing pre- and post-tests with youth. We unfortunately cannot do follow-ups with youth because they leave and we don't know where they go a lot of times. Or they leave foster care facilities and they're at another facility who is not going to allow us to go in and talk to that youth. So they're pre-tested before the curricula begins by the facilitator and they receive a post-test after. And we really worked hard to design the process to ensure that the youth were comfortable and that things were confidential. So they're actually filling out a pre-test, putting it in an envelope that they seal. It has a number on it. They hand it to the facilitator so that they know that their responses are never looked at by that facilitator. And so when it comes to us, we have no names attached to anybody. And that it's worked pretty well. We also have a process evaluation because we're using evidence-based curricula. The fidelity monitoring is a big part of it. Both curricula already came with the way they wanted us to do the fidelity monitoring. We've only modified it a little bit to ask more questions about why did you have to change something. And a lot of the facilities, we get answers like there was a fire drill or the youth were on lockdown and we couldn't keep going. So we're using primarily the fidelity monitoring logs from the curricula. We also asked the facilitators to fill out a survey on their perceptions of how well that module was received by youth. And we've got some great feedback about how much the youth hate role plays and certain videos. And then we're doing interviews in focus groups. So we've done one focus group with youth, and we've done several interviews with the facilitators. And also more of our program staff are going out and doing observations of the facilitators. So today I'm primarily going to just talk about the outcome evaluation and what we're measuring. So both evidence-based curricula have their own pre- and post-tests attached to them. They're extremely long, and if we gave all of it to youth, it would take hours for them to complete, and it was just way, way too much. Coupled with the fact that ACF, who's funding this, has their measures that they want us to use. So we kind of did a mix of what we could and got the pre- and post-test down to where it would take a youth between 20 and 30 minutes to go through it if they have good reading skills, which we've discovered a lot of them don't. Even though we had a health literacy expert come in and really go through our measures, they're still a little bit too difficult for some of the kids. But we're collecting demographic information. We have to ask about adult preparation as part of our grant. So there's a couple questions about how well you feel prepared to make certain decisions. We're asking for knowledge on condom use, safer sex, attitudes, self-efficacy with birth control use. We do ask information about their sexual history. And then their behavioral intent. In the post-test, we ask information about how well they liked the curricula and the program, and those are funder-based questions. And then we do have a substance use measure in there because we knew that we were going to that we weren't going to be able to follow up, and there's a lot of threats to validity in this study, so we wanted a non-equivalent dependent variable, and then we ended up at a substance use facility, and so it didn't work anyways. But we tried. So this is what we've got so far. We have data on 493 youth. About 10% of them are foster youth. 62% are in juvenile detention centers. 19% in the residential treatment center. And 9% at the homeless shelter. And looking at the race and ethnicity, most of our kids are Hispanic or Black. And that really reflects the kind of overrepresentation of those youth in the juvenile justice system, since that's primarily where we're getting data from. The mean age is 15 years old. And then in terms of gender, again, because most of our youth right now are from the juvenile detention centers, it's primarily males, 64% males. We do ask about sexual orientation, and we've gotten actually a pretty high number of youth identifying as LGBTQ. 19%, and then 81% are identifying as heterosexual. In terms of sexual history, about 85% of them have said yes, that they have had sex. When we ask about number of partners in the past 3 months, I know these are a little bit hard to read, but 17.5% of them have said they have had no partners in the past 3 months, so the rest of them have. So we're talking about a group that is sexually experienced. And then we also ask number of times you or your partner that you have been pregnant or you have gotten someone pregnant is the actual language we use. So most have not been pregnant or have not gotten someone pregnant, 68%. But then we have a high number in here, and I added it up earlier, it comes out to around 30% of youth are saying that they have been pregnant or they've gotten someone pregnant. Again, I'm a little bit skeptical of that because we have so many males in here, and I think a lot of the males that I've worked with in the past who are moving through systems don't necessarily know if someone's gotten pregnant or not. So we also ask about frequency of birth control use, and you can see on here that 53.4% are saying in the past 3 months that they have not used birth control, so none of the time they've used birth control. Only about 20% have said all the time that they've used birth control. Frequency of condom use in the past 3 months, the 29.3% is none of the time that they've used it, and then some of the time, 31%. So low use of birth control. So knowledge and self-efficacy. We want to see, are we increasing knowledge and are we increasing self-efficacy? And you have to, my happy faces are just, when Laura and I present to our partners, we try to really engage the agency so they stay involved with us and they actually do these pre and post tests and send youth. So we've created our little system of trying to show them what's good and what's not. So if you look under knowledge, HIV knowledge of how to use condoms and pregnancy prevention, how to prevent pregnancy, we're seeing significant increases in all of those things. With self-efficacy, we are not seeing any significant increases in terms of condom negotiation or technical skills, which is interesting because both of these curricula have a condom demonstration built into them that you have to do to maintain fidelity. With attitudes and intent, we see that in general, if you look at have sexual intercourse, so is it a very good idea or not a good idea, there's not really a difference from pre to post tests of what youth are saying in terms of whether or not they think it's a good idea to have sex. They do think it's a good idea to use birth control, but not necessarily condoms. But if you look on the pretest for the use of condoms, it's already very high anyways that they think it's a good idea to use condoms. But when we go down to behavioral intentions and we look at condom use, it's much lower in terms of whether they say that they will use condoms if they have sex. So we are seeing some behavioral intent changes. They're less likely to say that they'll have sexual intercourse, more likely to say they'll use birth control and condoms and abstain from sexual intercourse also. So we ask, I think about 3 different ways, are you going to have sex? And so we've kind of matched up that data in different ways. And it tends to come out pretty consistent throughout the pre and post test. So there are a lot of limitations from this, primarily attrition, and we knew this going into it. We absolutely knew that there was not going to be a whole lot we could do about this. So we've served almost 900 kids in the program, but we've got data from 400. Not all of that is attrition. Some of it was IRB issues with different sites. I was just counting my IRB, an IRB through our foster care agency, which involved criminal background checks and everything else before we could collect data, and then all the sites. So there were some sites where I got through faster than others. So we had numbers of youth served, but not pre and post tests yet. We just don't have the ability to follow up. I would love to go back in 3 months and 6 months and see what's going on with these kids, but they get lost in the system. They get shuffled around quite a bit. There's also issues with measurement error. The funder requires us to define sex as the act that makes babies, and we have protested. I've kind of kicked and screamed, but that is what our federal government has told us we have to ask. So I have issues with that, and I think it really impacts a lot of what we're finding. So I think that the issue of behavioral intent, et cetera, we really have to look at it in terms of how we're defining sex. We also are not currently measuring trauma, so I haven't figured out a good way that I'm comfortable with as a social worker who's worked with trauma to go in and ask kids, what have you experienced? But I think that that is really important, and we need to figure out the best way to do it that really protects them. From our process evaluation, we've discovered other limitations. So one is that we got buy-in from the top, but we didn't necessarily get buy-in from the bottom. And I know this because I've been at the bottom, and I've been those workers. And so when I went in to talk to people, they were like, yeah, you know, we're doing this with the kids, but the direct care staff, when it's time to send them over to their sessions, they're kind of like, yeah, you could go talk to those ladies about sex, or you could watch a movie, whatever you want to do. And so the kids would choose to go watch a movie. So it was really hard to get the direct staff buy-in. I think we've addressed that by going in and training the direct care staff. But it has been a challenge. There are some youth at these facilities that I think these curricula are too advanced for, particularly the youth at the homeless shelter who are not sexually active yet. It was just too much for them, and I think it actually kind of scared them. And the pre and post tests were a little bit difficult for those younger youth. And then my primary issue is that these curricula are not trauma-informed, and that's kind of where I'm going in the future. So if you really look at these curricula and you look at how they are presenting the messages to youth, one of the examples I use is there's a quote in one of them that says, if you get an STD, you are the one to blame because you knew what to do to prevent it. Well, if you had been sexually abused or raped, then that is not your fault. And so I've really struggled and gone back and forth with how do we change the language in these to be more trauma-informed, because I know that the kids in foster care, because I've worked with them, have experienced intense trauma, and the same with juvenile detention. And our girls who are trafficking victims, that how does that resonate with them? And so that's really where we're headed after this research, is to figure out how to make a curricula that is trauma-informed, that actually addresses the issue of sexual abuse in a healthy way, so where people can heal and understand that it is okay to have sex, that it is a healthy part of their life. So in conclusion, right now, we are seeing that youth are engaging in risky behaviors. The curricula appear to be improving knowledge and behavioral intent. They don't necessarily appear to be impacting attitudes about sex and condom use. And they don't appear to be impacting condom self-efficacy skills. And my primary explanation for that is because I feel like it's not trauma-informed. It's not, when you've got kids in a juvenile detention center who you can't hand condoms to, you know, even if they are having sex in there, you can't give them the condoms to use. I know in foster care, too, it's the same issue where you can teach kids about birth control, but if they're in a foster home that doesn't let them use it, then what? Right? So I think that it's a start to take these evidence-based curricula and use them with these disconnected youth, but the next step really needs to be to adapting these so that the sexual health information is there for the youth, but that we're addressing the trauma as well. So that's all I have. Thank you. Thank you.